Welcome to the Israel Daily News Podcast. I'm your host, Shanna Fold, and I'm here to get you caught up quickly. I've got some top news stories for you today from Israel, and guess what? You're listening, so you're already on top of your game. Survive and thrive, people. Knowledge is the best weapon. Today is Thursday, June 18th, 2026 in the Gregorian calendar and the 3rd of Tammuz, 5786 in the Hebrew calendar. Stay tuned for the end of the show. We have the voice of the people about this deal and a special report on basketball and the Knicks' big win. Hint, we talk to people here in Tel Aviv about that. We close with the Torah thought to bring you into the weekend, into Shabbat. Now, let's get to the news. The Memorandum of Understanding between the United States of America and Iran has been signed, and tomorrow, which is Friday, will be a ceremonial-type signing in Switzerland between U.S. Vice President J.D. Vance and Iran's Mohammad Khalibaf, the Speaker of Parliament in Iran. But essentially, the deal is done since parties from each side signed an electronic agreement on Sunday and then also signed in pen on Wednesday. Now, the Wednesday signing was between President Donald Trump and Iranian President Masoud Pezeshkian. But this deal is meant to end the war in the Middle East. And since the news was out that it would all be penned on Friday, this Wednesday signing came into effect 2 days earlier than the originally envisioned signing, with Tehran getting large-scale economic relief and apparently agreeing to dilute its enriched uranium. Now, Wednesday, President Trump signed in France. He signed a document in Persian as well, in Farsi, which is the language of the Iranians. And the speaker signed in Iran, and photos were disseminated of him by Iranian state-backed news outlets. So Trump and the Speaker of the Parliament of Iran didn't sign at the same time. They signed separately with cameras on them, and they signed in the alternate language document. The agreement contains 14 points and begins with an immediate ceasefire, requiring that both sides end all military activity, including in Lebanon. The deal also requires Iran to ensure the safe passage of commercial vessels through the Strait of Hormuz at no cost for 60 days. However, after this period, it may impose fees. Fees on the Strait of Hormuz, something that didn't happen before, did not exist before. The U.S. also commits to providing at least $300 billion U.S. dollars to aid the reconstruction and economic development of Iran and will terminate any current sanctions against the country. Notably, the deal requires that Iran not procure or develop any nuclear weapons. Let's go through the 14 parts of the agreement in layman's terms. Number one, the war ends. Iran and the United States agree to stop fighting immediately and permanently, including any fighting connected to Lebanon. Both sides promise not to attack each other or threaten military action in the future. Number two, respecting each other's borders. Both countries agree to respect each other's sovereignty, borders, and independence, and not interfere in each other's domestic politics. Number three, a permanent deal must be reached within 60 days. Again, this was a memorandum of understanding, an MOU, a deal before the deal, if you will. Iran and the U.S. will negotiate a final long-term agreement within 60 days unless both sides agree to extend the talks. The U.S. ends, this is number four, the U.S. ends its naval restrictions. The United States will stop blocking or interfering with Iranian shipping. Maritime trade should return to normal within 30 days. The U.S. also agrees to pull military forces out of nearby areas within 30 days after a final deal is signed. Iran reopens shipping routes. That's number five. Iran agrees to restore safe commercial shipping through the Persian Gulf and the Sea of Oman. Ship traffic should return to normal within 30 days, including clearing mines and other obstacles that might be out there. Number six, a $300 billion economic recovery plan. The United States and its regional partners will help create a massive economic development and reconstruction plan for Iran worth at least $300 billion U.S. dollars. The details must be worked out within 60 days. Number seven, sanctions will be removed. The United States agrees to eventually remove all sanctions on Iran, including U.S. sanctions, U.N. sanctions, and restrictions tied to Iran's nuclear program. The timeline will be negotiated in the final agreement. Number eight, Iran says it will not build nuclear weapons. Iran repeats its promise not to develop nuclear weapons. However, the future of Iran's enriched uranium stockpile and other nuclear issues will be negotiated later as part of the final deal. So they're not really dealing with it right now. They're agreeing to deal with it later. Number nine, no new escalation during talks while negotiations continue. Iran will not expand its nuclear program. The United States will not impose new sanctions. The United States will not increase its military presence in the region. Number 10, Iran can sell oil again. Immediately after the signing, the U.S. Treasury will allow Iran to export oil, petrochemicals and related products. Banking, insurance, shipping, and other services needed for those exports will also be permitted. Number 11, frozen Iranian assets will be released. The United States will gradually unfreeze Iranian money and assets held abroad as negotiations progress. Iran's central bank will be allowed to use those funds freely. Number 12, a monitoring system will be created. Both sides will establish a mechanism to monitor compliance and make sure the final agreement is being followed. Number 13, further negotiations depend on early implementation. Once Iran sees that the U.S. has begun implementing key commitments, especially on shipping, sanctions relief, oil exports, and asset releases, both sides will continue negotiating the remaining elements of the final agreement. And number 14, this is the last part. And again, we rewrote these for you in layman's terms so that we didn't have to read out all of the legal jargon. The final deal gets UN approval. Any final agreement will be formally approved through a binding resolution of the United Nations Security Council, giving it international legal backing. The most controversial part for critics of this 14-point plan is that Iran's existing enriched uranium and broader nuclear infrastructure are not resolved in the current memorandum. Those issues are deferred to the final negotiations. Well, what do you think about all of that? I will not say what I think. I won't say as an Israeli and I won't say as an American. I will just report the news and hope that you all are able to come to an informed position on your own. Now, Trump announced at the G7 summit in France Wednesday that the U.S. would allow Iran to retain some ballistic missiles. When entering the war, the United States shared its objective to fully dismantle Iran's nuclear capabilities. However, Trump dismissed any commentary that he did not achieve that goal. He dismissed that, stating that the U.S. had destroyed around 84% of Iran's ballistic missiles and that those that remain are underground. So we have two different issues here. We have the nuclear issue and we have the ballistic missile issue. And Israel also took out a lot of the ballistic missile launchers in Iran, as well as in Lebanon, in South Lebanon. At the G7 summit, reporters also raised questions about whether the peace deal included any enforcement clause, to which Trump said, "If it doesn't get done in 60 days, that's all right. We go back to bombing." Trump also noted that his administration is regularly briefing Israel's Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, about the peace deal. It's the first time we've said his name in this report, and that Israeli officials have received a copy of the official agreement at this point. But from our understanding here at the Israel Daily News, Israel was not allowed to see the deal before it was signed or have input on it. Now, I'm sure we'll have more details about that later on, and I'm sure people who were a part of that deal will say whether Israel was privy to this or not, but it seems like this was really a U.S.-Iran deal. On Monday, After the news came out about the deal, Prime Minister Netanyahu held his first press conference in 3 months. During the 20-minute event, Netanyahu explained that he didn't know the contents of the agreement and therefore declined to criticize the agreement because it was too early. He didn't know what was in it, although there was speculation, and we also shared that speculation on this show on Monday. He emphasized that Israel did not sign the deal and instead noted that the U.S. had acted independently. Netanyahu spent a lot of the press conference, which was about 20 minutes, highlighting all the different successes and wins from the last few years of war and rattled off a list of all the terror heads in the region that Israel had assassinated. And he noted the success of the joint U.S.-Israeli campaign against Iran, which he said prevented Israel's annihilation by Iranian nuclear powers. And certainly he's talking about those nuclear powers in the future, because Iran has not yet achieved a nuclear bomb. He also commented that so long as he was Israel's prime minister, Iran would not have nuclear capabilities. Netanyahu also would not say if there was a possibility of Israel attacking Iran or striking Hezbollah independently at this time. So we know that the deal is between the U.S. and Iran not to strike. But what about Israelis? And what about Israel here at home? I was listening to our political analyst, Binyamin Moalem, and one thing that he said in one of his reports from earlier in the week on his Instagram page was that the Israeli public does not like this deal. And I thought to myself, well, how does he really know that? How does he really know what the Israeli public thinks? So the Israel Daily News went out to the streets of Tel Aviv with our intern, Leah Karov, to hear the opinions of the people. Specifically, their thoughts about this deal between the United States and Iran and how they think that it'll impact us here in the Holy Land. We spoke with older people, people in their 30s, and even teenagers who wanted to share their thoughts with us while they were on their way to the beach for their summer break, which is underway. I really was tickled that the teens saw what we were doing and really wanted to get involved. I love that kind of, you know, that kind of involvement. You're 16 and you want to get in there. You want to say what you have to think. And by the way, I asked him what his parents thought of the deal, because I was confident that whatever he said was what he was hearing at home. And he said that he had not had a conversation with his parents about the deal. So those were really his own thoughts. Let's have a listen to what the people of Tel Aviv had to say.
I have children. I have grandchildren. I have grandchildren. I'm afraid that something will happen to this land.
My thought was that if Trump was the United States president during the Second World War, the Nazis would still be controlling Europe with the Munster and concentration camps. That's why I think you don't make deals with the devil. When devil arises from hell, you simply eliminate him. No deals with him. The devil is a devil. It won't change. No deal will help.
I thought it was a bad deal, but also a good one, because we had a lot of celebration, the 8 years for Trump and 250 for the White House. And like, I thought it was a good deal, but also not a smart one, because they give them money to do like a bombing and thing like that. It's not going to the civilians and all of this. Like, we have people that want to kill us, all of us. So, of course, I'm afraid of it.
A fresh Khan news poll shows Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's Likud and former PM Naftali Bennett's Together party is losing ground. The Israeli TV news poll shows Yashar party leader Gadi Eisenkot now sits at 21 seats, while Likud dropped to 23 and Bennett's party fell to 17. This shift is a stark reflection of public anxiety over both this deal and the broader Iranian threat, with 55% of respondents to this Israeli TV poll saying that they currently oppose the U.S.-Iran agreement, compared to just 18% who said they were in favor, with a staggering 70% say that they are afraid of Iran, even with this new framework put in place. Now, despite his party's decline, Netanyahu still leads on personal suitability for prime minister, with 41% backing him, compared to 33% for Eisenkot and 26% saying neither is fit for the job. If you used to be a monthly supporter of the Israel Daily News, please join us once again. Our platform discontinued its feature for taking contributions, but don't worry, we've opened up our own. The Israel Daily News now has its own direct donation platform. Listeners can contribute monthly or make one-time donations directly through our website, israeldailynews.org. Click on donate or sponsor, it'll lead you to the same place. Your support helps keep our independent journalism alive and growing. The reason we can go out into the street and ask people what they think of this deal, and the reason you can get a touch of the culture and the politics from on the ground, is because of our sponsors and because of people like yourself. You can follow Israel Daily News across our social media platforms on Instagram, TikTok, X, and LinkedIn at israeldaily.news or Israel Podcast on X. Last night at Tribe Tel Aviv's Sunset Series, which is a program that I host for the Olim Chadashim, or the new internationals that have moved here to Israel, we hosted Miriam Schwab. She founded Stratic, which is a company that was purchased and merged into a WordPress plugin known as Elementor. Well, she told the Room of Internationals about being a mother of seven, opening and completing her own company, having that company get sold, and then becoming an employee within her own brainchild. And she told us all about that. Super interesting. We'll have a write-up about it on our website, israeldailynews.org, in the coming days. So keep an eye on that to get inspired by a woman who's really been able to do it all. And now for a fun story about Knicks fans here in Israel. Our intern, Alex Eidelkind, helped put this fun story together. The New York Knicks won their first NBA title on Saturday of this past week. It's their first championship win in 53 years, causing many people right here in Tel Aviv to rejoice. But what a lot of people may not know is that this franchise has more Jewish and Israeli history than almost any other team in the whole entire league. The very first basket in NBA history, dating all the way back to 1946, predating the State of Israel, was scored by a Nick whose name was Ozzy Schechtman. He was a Jewish man. Hall of Fame coach Red Holzman, the son of Jewish immigrants, led the Knicks to their only two prior championships before this one. And perhaps most notably of all is Amare Stoudemire, one of the greatest Knicks of all time throughout the 2010s. And later, he became an Israeli citizen after converting to Orthodox Judaism and ultimately won a title, Maccabi Tel Aviv. Well, this year's playoff run leaned into this identity quite a bit with the viral chant, "My mayor Muslim, my bagels Jewish, my Christian Dior, Knicks in four," becoming the unofficial anthem of the championship, with tens of thousands of crazy Knicks fans chanting things just like that to Hasidic Jewish fans who were breakdancing outside of Madison Square Garden in New York City. Jalen Brunson led the New York Knicks to success, and just this morning, so that's Thursday, the team became the first NBA champion team to be invited to visit the White House since Trump returned to office. But here's where the Israel angle comes into play. The Knicks won it all. The celebration, however, did not just stay in New York. The instant that the final buzzer sounded, the streets here erupted, even in the middle of the night, those wee pre-dawn hours, as people at watch parties screamed, cursed, and hugged strangers. You could even stumble onto any balcony and hear roars of "Go New York, go New York, go" from the streets, as if our city here in Tel Aviv had won the game itself. Well, we caught up with one American on the beach who made that 3 a.m. trek after hearing where the celebration was going to be. Let's have a listen to what his experience was like celebrating this once-in-a-lifetime thing here in Israel. How was it?
Had the time of my life. I really want to be back in New York with my family to watch the Knicks. But when you're here and you go to the bar at 3 o'clock in the morning, you're still with a bunch of Americans. A couple of Israelis were there, and it was a total different experience. and we jumped up, we hugged each other, we had a time, it was still great.
The moment, however, was not lost on native-born Israelis. The love for basketball runs very deep right here in Israel. We spoke with 33-year-old Omer, who lives in Jaffa, just down the road. And he said that he grew up on basketball. Let's talk to him.
Can you tell us about your love for basketball as an Israeli?
Yeah, of course. I mean, it's one of the major sports here after soccer, football. And I used to play as a teenager. So, you know, I grew up on Kobe, always watched Michael finals. And every year I watch the playoffs.
And while most of us were only able to watch from afar, not everybody did. We learned about one American who was doing a summer internship in Tel Aviv and went so far as to fly back to New York for game four of the series before returning to Israel to finish out the rest of his summer, claiming that even though the tickets were a fortune, he, quote, had to be there to support Brunson, Towns, and Hart for what very well might have been a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. That's according to this young man. I believe he's doing an internship program here in Tel Aviv and actually got on a plane to go back and see that game. The timing of all of this feels written in the stars. Basketball fever is running hot right here with Maccabi Tel Aviv and Hapoel Tel Aviv set to battle it out for the Israeli championship in the coming days in what is the biggest rivalry that basketball has to offer here in Israel. For one night, two cities, one sport, and for a country that hasn't had too much to celebrate recently, it's a very exciting time to be a basketball fan here in Israel as well. And now for a Torah thought by Rabbi Yossi Madvig of Oswego, New York.
In this week's Torah portion, the cousin of Moses, Korach, challenges the authority of Moses and Aaron, and God stands up for them and demonstrates that Moses' authority isn't taken illegitimately, but was because of his humility and his relationship with God. And so the Haftorah is from the prophet Shmuel, Samuel, and he is actually a descendant of Korach, and he also is reminding people that the king's authority, in this case, Shaul, King Saul, is legitimate insofar as he is humble and submitting to God. At the end of the Haftorah, it says, God will not forsake his people for his great name's sake. And this verse can be contrasted to Psalms 94:14, which says, God will not forsake his people and will not abandon his inheritance. So adding the phrase referring to the Jews as his inheritance and omitting the phrase for his name, his great name's sake. The inheritance in this context means the land, which can be farmed in order to produce food. And the Jewish people are considered God's inheritance because they provide sustenance, so to speak, to God, meaning that they have the merits that they build up through their good deeds, through their following the commandments, that serves as a means to sustain God, meaning to enable him to continuously create and sustain the world. We're basically giving the world a reason to exist. And in this context, the two verses describe opposite situations. So if the Jewish people are meritorious, then God treats them as his inheritance, and he looks after them. If they're not meritorious, he still looks after them, but only for his great name's sake, not because of their merits. So ideally, our merits should suffice to cause God to consider us his inheritance. And we accrue these merits in a two-stage process. The first stage, the lower stage, is that our behavior lives up to God's standards. And we do this by cultivating an amount of self-discipline and humility and arousing our own mercy on our divine souls, freeing it to do and accomplish what God wants. The second higher stage is having an emotional relationship with God, loving him with all of our heart, with all of our soul, and with all of our might. However, if we are lacking in our behavioral or emotional relationship with God, then we need a doorway, so to speak, with no door to open, right? If you view this as these two stages as doors, right? And each one is framed by doorposts and a lintel, or has sides and a top, and we have to open that door in order to enter into our relationship with God. But if we don't have that, then we need a third option, right? We need God to have a doorway with no door, where God's protection can come upon us from his initiative, even though we haven't earned it. And this open doorway is symbolized by the doorway in the temple, which is called the Ulam, which has no doors. So Samuel, the prophet Samuel, is alluding to this this other dynamic, where the people, he's ensuring that the people, even if they don't have the sufficient amount of merits to elicit God's protection and love, nevertheless, God will still tend to them and protect and guide them for his great name's sake. Shabbat shalom.
All right. Well, that is it for today's show. Today is Thursday, June 18th, 2026. Tel Aviv has a low of 23 degrees Celsius and a high of 27. That's 75 degrees Fahrenheit, going up to just about 80 degrees for the high. We are everywhere. Don't forget to sign up to our Israel Weekly News Wrap. The Israel Weekly News Wrap is a newsletter with the top five stories coming out of Israel from throughout the week. And of course, with a personal note from me at the top, you can sign up for that at israeldailynews.org. Scroll down to the bottom and drop your email address in. A big thank you goes out to our incredible sponsor, Marianne Vollinger, our writer, Perry Schwartz, and our associate producer, Lori May, and, of course, our new interns. Great job, Alex, on working with me on that Knicks story. That was fun, and your writing is excellent. Have a great and productive day and an excellent weekend. Shabbat shalom, everyone.